and welcome to Four Panel, geek show all about comics and manga. If it's drawn on a piece of paper with a speech bubble, we'll talk about it. We are here today with myself, Ben, and the lovely Rob.
Hello. How is everyone today?
I am pretty damn good. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm well fed, and I've been to the gym, so I'm happy.
Okay. Let's talk about what's going on with comics this week.
Well, we've got some Tank Girl news.
Oh, really?
Yes, Jamie Hewlett is returning to Tank Girl. He's the co-creator.
That is big news. A lot of people have been sort of turned off from Tank Girl because they're like, oh, it's not the thing we used to love. Like, it's still pretty much down the same lines, but it has changed a bit. This might bring some of the old fans back.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tank Girl was originally created by Alan Martin and James Hewlett, or Jamie Hewlett, as he's known. And I'm actually glad he's back on it because I read, you know, the one that we featured on Four Panel a few weeks ago?
Yes.
The trade paperback one, or the graphic novel one. I like the art style and stuff like that, and it's very, you know...
It's very stylistic.
It's very stylistic, but I miss the old Tank Girl, you know, the old way it was drawn.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that made me such a fan of Tank Girl was just the style of the original comics.
Yeah. That's what drew a lot of people to Tank Girl.
It was very post-punk, you know.
Yeah, well, it's the same guy who does the artwork for the Gorillaz, isn't it?
Yep. Yes, it is.
And it's that same sort of stylistic choice.
Yes, it is. So, yeah, we're gonna watch this space because Ben and I do like Tank Girl quite a lot. So we'll let you know how things progress. Moving on, the biggest news of the week, I suppose, is Turtles.
Yes. After a billion different variations, a million different series.
And it's been going for about 2 decades as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, for what I believe the first time ever, a turtle's died. Someone's feeding on turtle soup tonight. That might have been a bit cruel.
Yes.
So in the most recent iteration of the comic, Donatello was killed. He had his shell smashed.
By Rocksteady and Bebop.
Yeah. While the rest of the turtles were out following Shredder, Bebop and Rocksteady approached Donnie and broke his shell. Guy went down swinging, but in the end...
I wonder if this is going to be taking Turtles in a darker direction. Does that mean that Leonardo and the rest of them are going to be out for blood this time? Because normally it's just kind of foot in face, you know, knock them out, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, does this mean that they're going to be mounting Rocksteady and Bebop's heads on spikes?
Well, it's just, the fact there's been a death is a lot darker than what usually happens.
Yeah.
Like, pretty sure deaths have happened, but it's the comic book way of where it's very PC and it was like the bad guy and it was like, oh, but I'm sure he'll be back and he's back. This seems like a very dead.
The final panel, I believe, of the comic was actually quite touching with the turtles and all the peripheral characters around and Splinter with Donatello's head in his lap saying, my poor brave son.
Yep. But like in a lot of comics, I'll believe it when I see it. I don't think this is the last of Donatello.
Donatello was the one who made all those wonderful toys, to quote Jack Nicholson from the original Batman.
To quote the theme, Donatello's good with machines.
Yes. I'm kind of half expecting them to suddenly find like an adamantium shell or something like that somewhere in some cupboard.
Yeah. This is Robo Donatello. I downloaded my consciousness into this before I died.
It's weird you say that because there is a robot turtle in this panel.
Oh. Except, yeah. They ballsy move killing the turtle.
It is a very, very brave move. Donatello was actually quite popular as well. Quite a popular character.
Tell the truth, the turtles all are popular separately on their own. They've all got enough character to them that they sort of split the fan base on who is everyone's favourite.
Yeah, I don't know. Because there was a lot of people who used to like Raphael, and loads of people just wanted to be Leonardo.
And then, nah, Leonardo's boring. He's the least, like, charismatic one. Everyone liked Michelangelo.
Well, it's hard not to like Michelangelo, you know.
I know, it's a bit of sort of just the laws of turtles. You must like Michelangelo.
Yeah.
But, like I said, people were fans of all of them because they were all great characters.
Yeah, but Michelangelo is the Van Wilder of the turtles.
Yeah, but I always liked Donnie. He was my favorite.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, little buddy.
Yes, absolutely. Moving on.
He's in the sewer in the sky now.
Archie Comics.
Yes.
Archie Comics have announced a new horror imprint. Right. They had this series called Afterlife of Archie. And it's been on hiatus for about a year.
Yeah.
Now they're bringing it back as part of this horror imprint that they've got going on, which is going to be called Archie Horror.
Yeah.
It's going to have Afterlife with Archie. And it's also going to have The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and another as-yet-unnamed third title. According to Aguirre Sacasa, it's going to feature a major female Archie character from the past, but, you know, they haven't disclosed who. It's a bit of a weird direction for Archie. But then again, we know that Archie tends to go off in weird directions anyway.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, well, Predator's been in it recently. Like, it's not like weird things that can kill you aren't common.
Well, I mean, they've got, like, parallel universes in Archie where, you know, they've got Archie dating different, different women in these parallel universes, and then they killed Archie in one of the Archie versions. I mean, Archie's one of those weird comics. It's like, you know, Spider-Verse?
Yes.
Has all those different versions of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Archie's kind of similar to that when you look at it, because it's not just, you know, Life with Archie. That's just one of the Archie titles these days. And like, how does it work?
I think that's the only way they can explain all the bizarre cameos and stuff that are in them.
Yes. The Punisher is going to be your chaperone to this party.
Yeah. That's the famous one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the famous ones. But yeah, Archie's going into weird territory again, though.
Is it, Archie now doesn't really have a sort of stable of what his comic is. He is just a character that can go into any place, time, or setting. So he's more of an icon of the character than the comic.
Is Archie going to end up being like the Kirby of the comic books world, where he just appears in everything at random and can consume any comic book any comic book title that he comes across? So yeah. Anyway, we will try and get hold of some of these Archie horror comics, because I do like horror comics. We've read some interesting ones. That mountain one that you pointed out to us.
The Fault in the... Basically a story about there's an earthquake and a bunch of people-shaped holes appear in a mountain. I don't want to go into it much because it's very interesting. It's a short story. I will try and find it out what its name is. I'll tell you later.
It was a great little short story. But yeah. Anyway, I'm hoping they kind of go down that route with the horror, but I can't really see it happening because it's Archie. But maybe that's just because it's Archie and it's supposed to be really, really kind of cute and colourful and whatnot.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
Although I've seen a lot of like cute animes that get pretty damn brutal.
Barefoot Gen is a prime example of that.
Yeah. Plus, and then Watership Down you could class as a horror film for most children.
Yes. Yeah, you can. Shadow Star Narutaru, really gruesome horror. Moving on, TJ Miller. There is a rumor going around about this.
Yep. First, he was the enigma of the Amagari Fault.
Okay, cool. TJ Miller has tweeted that he is apparently confirmed as playing Weasel or Jack Hammer in the new Deadpool movie.
Yes.
We're not sure how true this is, though.
Yeah, this is going basically via tweet. But
every single news site seems to have picked up on it.
Yeah, it has been caught up and it is pretty much believed to be real. And tell you what, really good sort of casting if it's true.
Yeah. But on the back of that as well, Jim Parsons apparently wants to play the Riddler.
Yes, you don't know him, Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. And I can see him. He could make a really good Ridley. He's sort of got the look.
He's got the look. And if he reprises bits of Sheldon in there as well.
Yeah. The thing I do worry about, though, is can you remember when Jim Carrey played the Riddler?
Yeah.
He seems like he would be a really good fit for the Riddler, but all you saw was Jim Carrey. I'm worried that all you'll see is
Sheldon Cooper.
Yeah.
He sort of
got typecasted as Sheldon now.
I think it'd be good as the Riddler, but I think the Riddler would be good with elements of Sheldon as part of his character, you know, the OCD stuff like that. You know, the belief that he knows better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. It's just, if he suddenly says Bazinga, I'm going to punch someone.
Zimbabwe.
What?
People get that reference. Not everyone, but some people.
That one went way over my head.
I could tell. Like I said, these are really good sort of, really good casting, if they're correct.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's all rumours at the moment. Sheldon's only saying that he wants to play that role. He hasn't got that role. So yeah, just keep an eye out for stuff.
Yes, we will. Right. I think, have you got any more?
Yes, we've got very big
God,
news.
Yes. I forgot about this.
Secret Wars is coming up, and there are a lot of series that are going to be ending. So, we've got 33 listed as confirmed ending. There might be more, but the current rundown goes all new Captain America, all new Ghost Rider, all new X-Men, Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing X-Men, Angela... Asgardian Assassin, Avengers World, Captain Marvel, Cyclops, Deadpool, Elektra, Fantastic Four, Guardians 3000, The Guardians of the Galaxy, Hulk, Inhuman, Iron Fist, The Living Weapon, Legendary Star-Lord, Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, New Avengers, Nightcrawler, Nova, Rocket Raccoon, Secret Avengers, Spider-Man and the X-Men, Spider-Man 2099, Storm, Superior, Iron Man, Thor, Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine, and X-Men.
Take a breath there, yes. The Amazing Spider-Man is finishing. I'm surprised at that, because the Amazing Spider-Man is like one of their old properties, isn't it?
That's basically the one that started Spider-Man. Yeah. There's over 700 issues of it. It's been going forever. So it's probably going to be coming back.
Yeah.
This is probably just going to be like a reset to zero.
Because, I mean, when you think about Spider-Man, he's not called, you know, the Incredible Spider-Man or the Fantastic Spider-Man. He's called the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's where the title comes from. Hulk as well. Is that just Hulk or the Incredible Hulk?
That's Hulk.
Right, okay.
Uncanny
X-Men, that's...
Yeah, a lot of these are, like, big titles that probably means they're going to come back.
As a reboot.
Yeah, because...
They're going to be rebooted.
They have been going on a while, and a reset to zero might work for some of them.
This is basically Marvel cleaning house.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the whole idea of Secret Wars is to basically... cut a lot of things. What I want to know is they're cutting a lot of different Spider-Mans, including Miles Morales.
Yeah.
But Miles has been shown to be very, very...
popular.
Yeah. His continuity doesn't make sense without Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Because it's Peter Parker's death that convinced him to go forth and be the new Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's cut from the continuity in Secret Wars, then how can they continue? It's like, there's a lot of things going around that, like, I'm not sure how they're going to sort things once this is done.
This is going to take a lot of planning and preparation before they actually put these cuts in.
There's so many comics that are still going to be running that work on continuity from these current comics. Oh, God, comics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fallout from this is going to be huge.
So, the thing that sort of made me kind of upset was the fact that Thor's on there. Because the new female Thor is amazing.
Yeah.
And she hasn't had that much time in the limelight.
Well, Angela's on there. Angela, Assassin of Asgard, or Asgardian Assassin, whatever it was. She's kind of she's a character who's been kind of appearing and disappearing over for quite a few years.
Yeah. I'm hoping a lot of things will be saved because, like, they just started up, like, Spider-Gwen and all of them.
Spider-Gwen's not on there, thankfully.
Yeah, so, like, I'm hoping that sort of came out of the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
So maybe a lot of these characters will get a new series out of this.
I am surprised to see Spider-Man 2099 on there, because that one was one of their more stable Spider-Man titles.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then again, maybe that's going to get a reboot. We don't know.
Yeah.
Because that's not a, that's a future, that's one set in the future, so.
Yeah, there are a lot of these that, although they're being cancelled, I'm pretty certain are going to be coming back.
Yeah.
So, on the other side of things, DC has announced a buttload of new series that they're going to be doing.
Yes, it's unusual. Because they've got Convergence as well, haven't they?
Yeah, well, this is what they're going to be doing after Convergence.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, they announced it. Fantastic.
This is only a few because I couldn't find all of them and there's a billion. But Batmite number one?
What, sorry? Batmite?
Yeah. You know, the little alternate dimension?
Oh, God, yes.
The magic finger?
Yes.
Yeah, he's getting one. Bizarro, Red Hood and Arsenal, that I'm looking forward to. Section 8, Black Canary, although Black Canary at the moment is looking like it's trying to copy Spider-Gwen a bit.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn and Power Girl, I'm looking forward to that.
That one's going to be interesting.
I've been seeing previews of that, and that looks amazing. Batman Beyond, Doomed, Dr. Fate, Starfire, and Robin.
They're actually doing the Dr. Fate comic again.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes, ooh. So there's a lot of stuff coming, and that is not even all of it. There is a lot more coming out. So they're just a few that I was finding very interesting. I think the linking up of Red Hood and Arsenal is really cool, because it's like two very gun-focused guys that sort of, they're working for the good side, but using very mean methods of doing it. So I think that's a good combo. And then just the previews that are coming out from the Harley Quinn Power Girl just look absolutely hilarious.
Cool. Fantastic. Right, okay. Shall we take a break there?
Yep.
All right, okay. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after this break.
Hello, this is Ryan from the Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, unavailable on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to 4Panel. And what we got now, Ben? We got comics.
Yes, but first up, want to thank people for sending them to us.
Oh, God, yes. We do want to thank them. Thanks to comicdomain.co.uk and to Turnaround for sending us this week's batch of reading material.
Yeah, if you go to Comic Domain's website, they saw our service. Well, they'll get all the latest comics and send them straight to your house.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good subscriber service. So, yes, shall we crack on?
Yes.
What have you got for us, Ben?
First up, Deadpool, number 43.
Yes.
This starts with Deadpool in the war-torn country of Wazarbad. Probably butchering that, but I think it's a made-up country, so.
Yeah.
Where he has been strung up, chained, and cannot move, basically. He's there to save a bunch of civilians that are being held hostage by Omega Red and save his friend. And he does it in his crazy Deadpool-esque bizarre way of doing things.
Yeah.
So the way he gets out of the chains is by eating his arm, you do. So he's got that mad back and forth in his own head, that funny dialogue. He also shows a lot of character development from, like, previous Deadpools. He's he's using his head more than he used to when it was all used. Everyone knows Deadpool doing the stupid things and not really caring and just doing it for him and having fun. It shows he's developed as a character a bit because of the way he acts, the way he thinks. He's thinking through and thinking of other people when he never used to do that.
Okay. Bit of a change in the character then.
Yeah. I was a bit... The cover does sort of make me think that he was going to fight Omega Red, but they never do, so that kind of disappointed me. But it seems like it's going to be a coming up thing. And that's going to be a good fight. Omega Red versus Deadpool. That's going to be awesome.
Cool. Hmm. Right. My turn, is it?
Yep.
Right. I'm going to start off with one from Image Comics. This is J. Michael, is it Straczynski? 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 And a couple of others. This is called Sidekick. I've got to say, this is only on issue 10, but I am actually picking up the first 9 issues this week because it is... It's really, really interesting. It starts off with a guy and what looks like his manservant in a house. The guy's just kind of lounging around, and then this fog comes in, and then next thing you know, it's not fog. It's actually two people who've come to kill that guy, and they show them how serious they are by killing his manservant. And turns out the guy is a superhero called Crimson Cowl who faked his own death. Very kind of Mega Man style. Only problem is he abandoned his sidekick, and it's his sidekick who's come to kill him. So, yeah, it says here what happens when a hero abandons their sidekick. They descend into madness, and it is all about Crimson Cowl's sidekick who... in this comic, actually does make him dead. Or rather, his partner in crime makes him dead.
So it's a great concept for a comic. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, what would happen if Batman actually abandoned Robin? Well, Jason Todd is kind of an example of that, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's quite a few Robins that have been abandoned over the years, and none of them quite end up quite right.
Yeah. I think with this comic, they've kind of taken it to the next level. And said, okay, look, this guy is a superhero sidekick, but he's actually got his own powers, his own abilities. Yeah. So, yeah, it should be interesting. I am looking forward to reading the next one.
Do you think that We Are Robin is just going to be a collective, like a support group for Robin? Like, he left me!
You mean like the villain support group in Wreck-It Ralph?
Yes. So they're all dealing with the same abandonment issue from the same person.
Yes. It should be Notice Me, Batman.
Yes.
That's the new one.
So, next up, I am going to be talking about Sonic Boom. I know everyone's excited for Sonic Boom. It's such a strong IP at the moment. So I was actually interested to see what this was like, because I've seen the game and that is god-awful. The cartoon is all right, but very kid-centric. So I wanted to see the comic, and tell you what, it isn't bad.
Really?
Basically, the story of this is Eggman decides, hey, I want to blow up a bridge. That'd be really cool if I blow up a bridge. Thing is, the only bridge around belongs to him. So he wants to sell the bridge so he can blow up the bridge. But it ends up none of the people in town trust him. They're not going to buy a bridge out off of him because they think he's a bad guy. And so no one's interested. So Eggman decides, I need to win the people back so that I can screw them over again.
Is this where the Lederhosen come in?
Yes. He decides to hold an event called Eggtoberfest. Obviously a joke on Oktoberfest. He even wears the Lederhosens and stuff. I said, things unravel, of course. Things don't go Eggman's way, and hilarity ensues. I said, it's not a bad comic. It's very much for kids, though. It's got kids' humour. A lot of jokes about how Eggman smells. So then again, not sure how many kids will get an Oktoberfest reference. I thought that was a bit strange. But
yeah,
like
that,
said,
there is a bit of an odd one.
The other day, a couple of weeks ago, you read Skylanders comic, and there was a couple of adult jokes in there. I'm wondering if they... So then again, I was going to say maybe they're giving them for the parents that were reading it to their kids, but then he went a bit in depth for that because the whole Lederhosen thing. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It's still a kid's comic. If you're a big fan of Sonic, you might enjoy it more, but because it's Boom, I can't suggest it. So yeah, it's good for you kids.
Okay, moving on to one that's probably not good for your kids. Constantine.
Yes.
Which...
very not good for your kids.
Which, it's odd, because whenever I think about John Constantine, I'm thinking Hellblazer, but no, this isn't Hellblazer. This is the new 52, just Constantine.
By the way, DC did announce that Constantine Hellblazer's coming out as well.
Really?
That was another one on the list.
Oh, fantastic. Right, this one's called A Salute to the Dead and Dying. And it starts off with Constantine and a bunch of people on the White Cliffs of Dover, and they all hate him.
As you do.
Yes. Just another day in the life of John Constantine. Next thing you know, on the very next page, is John Constantine and the same people, and a giant hand is appearing out of space. It is the hand of Darkseid, the evil one from the New Gods who wants to find the anti-life equation. Darkseid is basically pretty much killed off everything in his universe, almost.
Yeah.
And the alternate universe version of John Constantine has basically become a sacrifice to our current universe, John Constantine, who is basically saving a lot of other people by sacrificing his other self. His other self is basically like a lamb to the slaughter so he can bring all these people back to his reality.
Yeah.
But the whole emphasis on this is basically, it's basically highlighting he isn't a hero. You know, everyone just thinks he's a hero, but he isn't. He's not the guy who's going to sacrifice 100 people to save billions. He's going to do the opposite. He's going to save those 100 people he cares about and sacrifice the billions. And, you know, it does it quite well, but I don't know. It feels like it's missing some of the edge that Hellblazer used to have, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is John Constantine, but it seems lacking somewhat. I don't know. It does end with him in a bar with a drink, going, cheers, here's to life. But I don't know. There's something just missing from it, and I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah.
I probably will continue reading it. I'm not sure yet. I'm of two minds, because Hellblazer was one of those titles that I read, you know.
Yeah, it was a fantastic series. Is it just because you have this preconceived notion of what Constantine should be?
I think that's
that
the case.
You're judging it harsher than you would.
I think it's because I read Hellblazer, you know, back during the 90s when it was coming out, and it was such an iconic title for me. I'm reading this and it just feels very, very sanitized.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like they've purposely left parts of John Constantine's personality, you know, on the shelf, and they haven't taken it, you know, because John Constantine is one of the most complex characters in comics. You know, yeah. He's not a simple character at all, and part of the reason for that is the things that he's basically had to give up for the greater good.
Yeah.
That's part of who he is. And then to read a comic basically saying, you know, he's not a hero, and I know he's not a hero, but to read a comic where he's basically doing all the things that in Hellblazer he was kind of, yeah, this is not going to happen. I am never going to allow this to happen. And then suddenly allowing it to happen. It just feels weird.
Yeah.
You know, it feels out of character.
Except the fact you're coming in partway through a series
doesn't help.
Might have been events that change the character.
Exactly. There might have been. I mean, I know some of the characters that he's brought back are basically people he lost in this reality.
Yeah.
So I know that's going to color the character's preconceptions. But as you said, I'm coming in right at the end of a story arc, so it's difficult.
Yeah.
You know, there will be stuff that may sway my judgment, you know, and may make things balance out. I don't know until I read the ones that came before. Right.
And I suggest you do, since you're a fan of the character.
I am going to.
So there might just be that one issue you're going like, oh, everything now makes sense.
Yes.
Anyway, next up, Ant-Man number 3.
Ooh.
So this is right at the start of the series. And this starts with Ant-Man taking on his first job as a security installment guy. He set up his own company where he uses his aunt and his shrinking suit to allow him to install personal security measures, motion sensors, gun turrets if you want them, like this person at the paperclip storage factory wanted.
Yeah.
Because he's basically, he is settling down in Miami. It's where his ex-wife has brought a daughter to get away from everything, and they're just trying to live a normal life.
Yeah.
So Ant-Man is trying to make a real living installing security.
Logical move.
Yep. That is until Taskmaster comes about.
Oh, God, Taskmaster.
If you don't know Taskmaster, he's a mercenary with the ability to basically memorize people's moves.
Yes.
And Ant-Man has fought against him quite a few times. He fought against him with Hawkeye and Spider-Man and Iron Man and all these people. So, like, he's like, oh, Taskmaster, my arch rival. And the Taskmaster doesn't really see the same. He's like, oh, no, I was there for the other guys you were just sort of about. Can you not call me your arch rival? I mean, I've got a... I need to keep my name up. I'm trying to be a professional mercenary here. So, yeah, it's basically the confrontation between these two fighting. And basically, I'm trying not to say much because it's early in the series. Yeah. And I don't want to ruin things, but it's got a really nice story to this issue. But the thing that struck me was it's very nicely drawn. Ooh. Like, to me, it sort of looks like a cross between the Hawkeye comics and Archer.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I'll just quickly... Like, can you see what I mean? Like, it's got that feel Hawkeye and Archer.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really good. It's got one hell of a cover, by the way.
Like, that's a great cover.
As it really seems to be developing into an interesting series. So keep your eye out for that one.
Ooh, I will. Moving on to another one that is basically the end of that particular story arc. This is Justice League Unlimited.
Ooh.
From the New 52. And in this one, it's the end of this particular story arc, the Justice League, and for some reason, not Justice League Unlimited, I read that wrong. It's Justice League United, and they even have the Canadian Maple Leaf thing.
How did you mix up that? He's got United written in giant letters.
Do you know what I was thinking? Because there's the cartoon called Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah.
And that's where my brain went automatically. But yeah, Justice League United, and... Yes, I think this is like I think this is a bit like Alpha Flight, which is the Canadian Avengers. This is like the Canadian Justice League.
Yeah.
They are working together with the Legion of Superheroes from the 31st century. Brainiac 5 has just messed up big time and accidentally created a black hole, which is about to destroy everybody and the planet of Thanagar, which is Hawkman's home world. All while they were trying to stop some guy who wanted to remake the universe in his own image.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, there's a big fight. They try and stop the black hole. Brainiac comes up with a possible solution. They move Thanagar, and then everyone goes home.
Yay, happy days.
The weird thing is, Brainiac references this, because it's the end of this particular story, it's a weird place to come into it, because it's like reading the end of a book. Before you've read the rest of the book.
Yeah.
But there are references in here to stuff that I know about from other comics. The relationship between Supergirl and Brainiac 5, for example,
yeah,
is an obvious reference, and we know about that from other comics because eventually Supergirl ends up in the future, and she's dating Brainiac 5 in the future, which Clark isn't too happy about because the current version of Brainiac is one of his archenemies. So to find out his cousin is now dating the fifth iteration of Brainiac,
yeah,
is just kind of, yeah. He goes into mother-in-law mode, apparently.
So the thing I want to know is, why does Canada always need its own version of things?
Don't know.
Justice League, like, covers the whole of Earth and the universe, but Canada needs a special group. Like, well, they're not safe enough.
Thing is,
the mooses are attacking.
Some of the heroes in this, some of the heroes and the heroines in this, from the Justice League, one of them in particular, Stargirl, She's a fully a full dyed-in-the-wool, card-carrying member of the Justice League, full stop, anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm still surprised why she doesn't actually have her own comic, because she is one of the other characters who has got a good degree of popularity. DC might want to dabble with giving her own comic. Martian Manhunter, John Jones, is in here as well.
Oh, well, he's in everything. He just pops up in everything, every so often, like in the middle of Batman. Hey, John Jones.
Yes.
Hey.
And the Justice League's other really intense character is in here, Hawkman.
Well, if they're on his home planet, it sort of makes sense.
Well, no, this is kind of Hawkman is now like him and Batman must have like staring competitions and stuff like that to see who's the most intense. Because he's supposed to be like really intense and just kind of he doesn't do the where is she, but only when he's talking about Hawkwoman. But apparently he turns into a diplomat.
Well, like I said, he is dealing with his planet, so
yeah, that's a hell of a job change, though. From really intense warrior fighting supervillains all over the universe to diplomat.
Well, isn't a lot of his planet's culture? It's only based on what I knew from the old cartoon, but
yeah.
Aren't they very like warrior based system? So a strong warrior would be the better choice for a diplomat than a diplomat.
Kind of. I mean, it is basically it's the very America tactic. You know, we are bigger and stronger than you. We're going to send our soldiers in to invade you, or we'll just send one soldier in a suit.
Fair dues.
Yes. Either way, you've been invaded.
Yeah.
So yes. Moving on to Ben.
Yep. Last up, I have got the all new X-Men number 37. If you don't know all new X-Men, Jean Grey, Cyclops, Iceman, Angel, and Beast were all sent to the future. And now Jean is showing signs of new psychic abilities. And Emma Frost has taken her under her wing. It's causing a bit of tension because Emma Frost is not on great terms with the future Jean Grey.
Yeah.
And now she's looking after past Jean Grey. And this is basically taken to an island that is been known as the armpit of the world to try and teach her to use her powers more effectively. And what Emma Frost does is she seals off all of Jean's psychic abilities, only leaving her with a telekinesis, and says, hey, that base place over there, go in there and you'll find a thing. You'll know it when you find it. And she goes in and she finds the blob. Making deals with the Yakuza. And it's basically a fight between her and the blob. The Yakuza don't last a second. The blob takes him out, just him going at Jean for the first attack.
Yeah.
I say it's very action-paced, it's very nice, but goddamn the art is beautiful. It is like a very hand-painted look. Everything goes into a lot of detail. Like I said, they go to the armpit of the world, and it looks grungy, it looks grimy, it looks like this horrible place. And the people are just, you can tell why they're there. Like, it's just got such an atmosphere and such a beautiful art style. It's like, you cannot describe how amazing this looks. All new X-Men, get it, because it's not going to be around for long. It's one of the cancelled ones.
Cool. Right. We're going to end with the comics with a graphic novel that we got from Turnaround. This one is by John Mueller, and it is called Oink, Heaven's Butcher. Right. In this world, humans rule through religion.
Yeah.
And they have created machines. Big machines, little machines, and machines that are basically implanted into the minds of people. And various humanoid animals. In this world, in the factory, there are pigs that walk like men, and they're used as slaves, and they're abused, and they are told that they are the basest creatures, and that they must do what they're told, otherwise heaven will turn its back on them. And a boy called Oink is there with all of them. Starts off with a human priest, going into a prison and then going down to the very depths of the prison where he goes to take Oink's last testimony. Basically, Oink's confession. And Oink tells him exactly what happened about Oink's time in the factory and about how Oink realized the truth of things and destroyed the factory and the people who were running it. The priest of the factory believed that Oink was heaven's retribution against humans who had strayed from the path. This is a really compelling piece of work, seriously. It's like, have you ever read Animal Farm or seen the cartoon version of it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. In Animal Farm, the pigs basically ended up being like humans, but in this, it's kind of the reverse. The humans are the monsters, but they're also the people who help Oink as well.
Yeah.
It's really well done, but the thing that really captures it is the artwork.
Yeah.
Seriously, the artwork is really, really good in this. It's, you know, it's got that visceral quality to it that makes it a bit more immediate, you know, a bit more brutal.
It's a very hand-painted. It's quite like that X-Men I just read, but with a lot more high quality, like a lot more detail to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's got
some very interesting uses of camera angle as well.
Oh god, yes. But the story is really good. I've got to say, I think this is going to be, I think Oink is in my top 10 for the year so far in terms of graphic novels.
See, every time we get a graphic novel, it seems like you've got another one on your list.
Well, there's just that many good ones that people haven't heard of. But Oink is a definite recommend for people. I mean, it's difficult to imagine what goes through the mind when they create a story like this. You know, when somebody comes up with a story like this.
Bacon.
I was trying to make a serious point, but then it's been totally derailed.
It's a very imaginative.
It's a very accomplished work.
Yeah.
I've got to say, it's a very, very accomplished work. I don't know much about the creator, John Mueller, but I am going to be looking up some of his other works because if they're of this caliber, he's got a new fan.
Yeah.
Seriously, this is a serious, seriously good graphic novel.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's us for the four panel this week.
Yes. You can catch up with us next week when we'll have more comics and graphic novels, and we may have some stuff from Captain Easy and Washtubs as well. We're not sure yet, but we'll see you all next time.
Bye.